This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, it's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Get ready for 12 minutes of fanboying, okay? Because we're going to have John Smoltz on the show, Major League Baseball on Fox analyst. He's one of the greats to do that. And then he just happens to be a pretty good baseball player as well. Hall of Famer, Cy Young. Happens to be a pretty good golfer as well. As a matter of fact, as we say hi to John Smoltz, my assumption is he'd just prefer talk golf. Hi, John. First off, I want to tell you why you're a great broadcaster, because when I watch you do a game and I watch you call a game, it's very comfortable and you talk to me. You're not trying to emulate anybody. You just give me the facts. You talk like a normal human being, and it's always a great experience. And I thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate that, because my goal when I got in the booth was to explain indirectly how hard the game is. Never come across like when I played it was easier, and try to teach somebody something. You know, I don't go in with a point that I'm trying to teach somebody. I let the game happen and then explain the game in a way where somebody sitting at home could be a novice or an expert and would understand what I'm saying. And I learned early in my broadcasting that if I say something or repeat or give a stat that somebody can kind of look up, then it's a useless stat. If I give some knowledge to where they couldn't possibly know because of having played it, then it's good. And that's kind of how I go about my business.
I always learn something, and it's a joy to have you on. John Smoltz joining us here on Sharp Money. Now I have to fan out a little bit more. I'm a 45-year-old man born in Sterling Heights, Michigan. Okay, shout to Warren.
Oh.
You know the area very well. I just went back home and visited my family, and you know how it is. I wonder, do you still feel like a Michigander at heart? Do you still have ties back to the Mitten?
I do. I'll always be a Michigander at heart. I have family members, probably three-quarter family members there and one-quarter family members other places. But, you know, Sterling Heights, Warren, that's where I grew up. Lansing, Michigan is where I started my sports, and that'll always be the home away from home. And you know, my teams that I rooted for, my bucket list is the Lions going to the Super Bowl and me maybe rushing the field someday, you know, and making a fool of myself because they've never been, stuff like that. I have ambitions. I've seen the Pistons, the Red Wings, the Tigers all in person win it, and I'd love to see the mighty Lions someday get to the Super Bowl.
John, what's it like for a guy who grows up in the state of Michigan, as we just discussed, and then to be selected by the Detroit Tigers? I would assume, even to make it to the big leagues, obviously is a dream come true for every player there. But then to be selected by a team that you grew up rooting for, and Patrick and I have talked at length of that 84 Tigers team, and I'm sure you being from the area followed that team very, very closely.
Yeah, it was a dream come true. I was at that game. I was at the clincher game. My grandfather worked on a ground crew. He got us tickets to the game, and saw Goose Gossage, of course, face, you know, Kirk Gibson in the home run. And I just thought this was the greatest dream in the world. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to do that because of the trade. I did pitch in an all-star game there, which was pretty cool. Played interleague there. And, you know, at the end of the day, I had an unbelievable career and a great opportunity because the Tigers traded me to Atlanta. It would have been a longer trail to the big leagues for me with the Detroit Tigers, but yeah, something special, something I'll never forget. It was a defining moment, the trade. I was not having a good year, and I had to put in perspective what my real goals were in life to make it to the big leagues. But to put on that Tiger uniform and wear it in the big leagues would have been unbelievable.
I promise, John, we'll get to current day baseball, but just one more follow-up. It was Doyle Alexander, and you know he's 36, 37 at the time. He pitched great when he got to Detroit. They won the division, so it worked out in the short term. But do you realize you're the trivia answer to so many questions kids my age and younger than me, like what could have been with John Smoltz? You go from Michigan and Detroit proper to Atlanta. Can you talk about that transition where you become a Georgian legend?
Yeah, so, you know, being one of their prospects and having the high expectations that I only had of myself, the club and the farm system really didn't have the assets that I thought were needed. They didn't have coaches. I saw a roving pitching coach like twice a year, and I was kind of going in the wrong direction. So it really was a break for me. You know, the Doyle Alexander trade, I remember it vividly because I was a part of it, but I remember watching every game, rooting for the Tigers still. And then all of a sudden he's 9-0, and I'm going, oh, man, this is going to be a tough trade to live up to. But the reality was I knew what was ahead of me in Atlanta. They were not a very good team. They needed pitching badly. And I realized that they wanted me, even though it wasn't that Detroit didn't want me. Detroit got what they needed for the short term, like you said. And Atlanta, my goal was to make it one of the most lopsided trades in the history of baseball. I don't know if it'll go down as that, but it certainly was an incredible run that not a lot of people saw coming. And like I said, I believe in myself that I would have made it with the Tigers, but not in the fashion that it was with the Atlanta Braves at the early age that I got to pitch in the big leagues.
John, you mentioned the Atlanta Braves. Let's talk about them for a second. You, Glavine, and Maddux, what a trio that was, all three Hall of Famers. You had a pitching coach in Leo Mazzoni. Tell me a little bit about him. Or was it a situation where as long as you got to the ballpark on time, you guys were so good, it didn't matter who was coaching you, whether it's Leo Mazzoni or anybody else?
And was Leo Mazzoni obsessed? Was he obsessed with first pitch strikes like I think he was?
Yes. Yeah, no, he was obsessed with a couple things, and it was really the game planning that we learned to adapt. He was a big believer in throw twice in between starts, throw strike one, and don't sacrifice stuff to hit location. So we were always in our office, we called it, throwing off the mound, getting kind of, you know, getting familiar with the strike zone by throwing a lot but less effort. And it really, really was great timing for me. But all three of us learned to become our own pitching coaches. I'd say 3-4 years in, we learned to be our own pitching coaches. And Leo was just a set of eyes that looked and always made sure that we were doing the things we needed to do. And we learned from each other. We played a ton of golf together. We picked each other's brains. We talked about hitters. And when you learn to become your own pitching coach, your success rate goes way up because you're not so dependent upon somebody coming out to tell you what you're doing wrong. You have a quicker learner response. And I think Leo was essential for me in the trade. Like I said, I didn't see a pitching coach in Detroit, maybe twice a year. And so he modified my pitches. He got me to the point where I went from a wild, hard-throwing right-hander to being able to dot that ball down and away at will.
One of the all-time greats, and this is a thrill for us, John Smoltz joins us here, Sharp Money. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So, John, you're not surprised. It's a loaded team, and Snetker's done a hell of a job, 70 wins for the Braves. But I would imagine you're surprised 70 wins for the Orioles. The problem is we're not talking about the Orioles. We're talking about the broadcaster. I want your take on what happened with the broadcaster and the Angelos family, of course. And then also, how about we go to the diamond and talk about how great these upstart Orioles are this year?
Yeah, I just found out today about what happened to Kevin Brown, right? It was Kevin Brown?
Yep. Yes, correct.
And, yeah, I don't quite understand it. There's got to be a little bit more beneath the ground there. If it's not, if it's for face value, I don't think it's going to settle well with people. I mean, a local broadcast team, look, they are supposed to be more of the homer variety, right? They're supposed to be rooting. A national broadcaster like me has no rooting interest, doesn't care who it is, just calls it straight. And if you're reading a statistical category, that is stats, data, and that is the reason that you are getting suspended, for some reason it doesn't add up. So I would like to think that's going to correct itself. But as far as the teams that you mentioned, Baltimore is legit. They can win it all. They have grit. They have an offense that's young, that from top to bottom is tough to get out. They don't rely on any superstar in their lineup where you could say Rushman is a superstar, but they complete each other with the way they put at bats together. Their only issue is can they get to the end of the day, end of the season, with their pitching and the limits they have. So huge acquisition of Jack Flaherty. That helps. And I just think that they're going to be a tough outcome postseason. If they get one of the two best records in the American League, they have a legitimate chance to represent the American League in the World Series. As far as the Braves, they're getting their pitching back a little bit. You know, you've got Max Fried back, hopefully Kyle Wright. They're leaking a little bit of oil in their rotation, and it's starting to show itself. I don't think anyone thought they could go wire to wire and dominate the entire National League, but they're as good an offense as I think I've seen in a long time.
John Smoltz here on Sharp Money. Now, John, there's a rumor that you're driving right now and killing time. The reason I bring that up is because I'm going to ask you something awkward. You can say no, and there, trust me, say no to me. I'm wondering if we can do one more segment with you. I promise you can absolutely say no if you've got something to do.
Oh, absolutely. We can do another segment.
You honestly, you're making my life. I'm texting my producer while we're talking to you. I can't stop smiling. You don't know what it means for somebody that grew up in Michigan, my age, to be talking to you. And when we return, we're going to continue with John Smoltz talking about, we're what, 8 weeks, regular season, Major League Baseball in a year. We got to talk about the pitch clock. We've got to talk about Verlander and Scherzer and so much more. Stick around here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thank you so much, John. We'll put you on hold and we'll come right back. We'll do a quick 8 minutes with the Hall of Famer and one of the all-time greats, John Smoltz, as we continue. Cannot wait to continue the conversation. I'm sorry, I'm geeking out. 87, Doyle Alexander helped us win a division, and the rest of the story is history. What would have happened if we held on to John freaking Smoltz? We continue. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Never in my broadcast career did I think I'd ask a Hall of Famer to hang through the break, but here we are. It's Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Everybody tells me John Smoltz, not only a Hall of Famer, one of the all-time greats, is one of the all-time great guys, and he just proved it because he hung on to talk to us as we welcome back John Smoltz, Major League Baseball on Fox. We talked about the analyst job he does there. John, we were having a conversation, and again, thank you. We were having a conversation. Amal's 47, I'm 45, Dustin's 38. The best pitchers we've seen with our own eyes, okay? And by the time the conversation was done, we narrowed the conversation to Pedro. You were on the short list. Greg Maddux was on the short list. Randy Johnson, Clayton Kershaw, underrated. There were plenty, but we narrowed it down to Pedro. I'm going to ask you the same question. The best pitcher, and then I'd love to get your take on Pedro Martinez.
Yeah, he was the nastiest guy I've ever faced. Pedro Martinez and I hooked up about 4 or 5 times. I hurt my wrist batting against him because his stuff was so nasty. I checked swing a couple times. And, you know, I played with one of the greatest in Greg Maddux. I think he's a generational pitcher, but Pedro was the nastiest, and the stuff that he had was virtually unhittable on a nightly basis. I mean, Randy Johnson, believe it or not, I never faced Randy Johnson, and we are the same era. I mean, it is exact the same era. Went to the minor leagues together and just never hooked up in the big leagues. He was intimidating. And, you know, when you talk about Roger Clemens, of course, there's going to be some an asterisk in some people's mind as far as the power pitching that he was, and whether or not, you know, the degree of how much stuff went surrounded his career. But I think Pedro Martinez, pound for pound. And it's ironic that we all went into the Hall of Fame, you know, together. And it just goes to show you, Pedro being the smallest guy, Randy being the tallest, and I'm in between. It was kind of like a good depiction of how each guy kind of did it a different way.
John, you had a 15-4 lifetime postseason record with a 2.67 ERA, 199 strikeouts and 4 saves and 41 appearances. We know you were a great pitcher. You had great stuff. But tell me from a psychological standpoint, because we were talking about this as well. You and Pedro, for my lifetime, are the two best postseason pitchers I've ever seen. You're the only two guys I'm giving the ball to. What made you so effective in those situations? No disrespect to the other guys, but it seemed like when you took the ball, it was like max one, maybe two runs, and if you get me 2 or 3, we're winning this game.
Yeah, I think the formula, or basically the way I always approached it as a kid growing up in Michigan, I put myself in these situations all the time. I fantasized and thought about pitching in game sevens and over again and wondered what it would be like. And it was everything I thought about when I was pitching in the postseason. I wasn't afraid to fail. It's not life or death. And I wanted to be the guy on the mound. No disrespect to Glavine or Maddux. I felt like I was going to be the guy that could get it done. Now, my stuff helped play better in the postseason. The way I liken it is this. I pitched 36, you know, regular season games, but never once did I pitch a regular season game like a postseason game. The effort level, the attention to detail. If I pitched 10 regular season games like I pitched postseason games, I wouldn't last. It's unfortunately kind of the way pitchers are pitching today. Max effort, you know, RPM, just kind of letting it fly every single time. A 3-1 pitch is not a given fastball in the postseason, where in the regular season I would throw it probably 90% of the time, a fastball. I didn't take chances. I was aggressive, and I loved the moment. You know, ironically, you mentioned all those games that I pitched. I could pick out one or two possibly that I thought I should have lost. Runs were scarce. You pitch against other great pitchers, and I got a chance to pitch in 3 7th games. Gave up 2 runs and won 1 game. Baseball can be cruel, but in the postseason, that was my formula. I was relaxed, the game was slower, and I loved every minute of it.
Awesome question, awesome answer. John Smoltz, Major League Baseball on Fox, joins us, the Hall of Famer. So we're just getting word. It looks like they're going to shut down Shane McClanahan for the year. That is tough to hear, John. A filthy lefty, a team that has a legit opportunity this year. Let's get your take on McClanahan. Looks like he's unlikely to pitch.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of like if there was a crawl across the bottom of every ticker, this is something we're not paying attention league-wide anymore. It's sad. I hate it. I talked about it in my Hall of Fame speech. I've been beating this drum for 10 years that we really don't care about these injuries. It's just next man up. There's an epidemic of injuries in starting pitching and pitching in general. I hate it. This guy's so nasty that he was headed for the Cy Young along with Garrett Cole. And we just kind of treat it now like, oh, well, next guy, this 25% of your roster is going to have Tommy John. Think about that. 25% of your pitchers on average in the big leagues has had Tommy John or will or going to. And it's just not normal. But having said that, a team needs 30 to 35 pitchers to get through a season. Think about that. 30 to 35 pitchers. And so you go back 15 years, that wasn't the case. It was a different era, a different philosophy, and I get it. It's hard to compare. But when you're talking about pitching, that's max effort, great stuff, unbelievable athletes, all I say, please let's keep them healthier. Let's find a way in the training and the philosophical approach to pitching and change some things so that these guys last longer. But until there's a shortage of these arms, this is what you're going to have year in and year out.
John Smoltz joining us, Major League Baseball on Fox. You mentioned Cole. So let's talk about the Yankees. Let's talk about the Mets. Let's stick with New York. Did you agree with the decision, Verlander and Scherzer on the move? And then maybe we can take a second to talk about Cole, who I've been down on in the past, John, but what a great job. Topsy-turvy year, and he's been very consistent this year.
Yeah, he has. He's made some adjustments from a couple of years ago. He had a little hiccup with the home run ball, some of the things with sticky stuff or whatever, and making those adjustments. He's been fantastic this year. He's been a stud. Love watching him pitch. And as far as those two New York teams, I think what you're finding out, whether or not they anticipated these rule changes coming into play, I would say their rosters got very unathletic. And that's the one thing in baseball now that you're going to have some athleticism in your lineup. Steal bases, put the ball in play. You can't just bop it around the court. You know, it'd be nice if you hit a ton of home runs. But you look at what the Atlanta Braves have, tremendous combination of speed, athleticism, power. And I think for the New York Mets, you know, you can say, obviously, they overpaid for two of the greatest pitchers in the game, but they felt that that was going to put them over the top. The New York Mets cannot outrun the injury rate in their rotation and on their ball club. So unfortunate what happened to their closer. That was a fluke. That had nothing to do with training. But their rotation year in and year out with DeGrom, even Scherzer, and even Verlander this year, every single pitcher it seems like they get finds a way to get hurt. So they had to kind of make a really, really tough decision, and it's the first time we've ever seen an organization pay that much for prospects. Hopefully the prospects come through. Hopefully it's not a low two-, three-year run. They can turn it around really quickly. But you look at the rosters and you look at the teams that you're talking about in New York, and they lost a little bit of that identity and what made them great.
John, here's what we're going to do. If our Detroit Lions make the postseason, we're going to invite you back on, and we're going to talk Detroit Lions football on VSiN for a national audience. A deal? Is that a deal?
That would be the greatest thing in my life. I'm telling you, I've accomplished a lot of things. I've seen a lot of great things. The Detroit Lions, that's all I have left. They don't even have to win the Super Bowl. They just have to get to the Super Bowl, and I promise you, I will be there. I'll come on. I will. There's a lot of things I'd be willing to do for the Lions my whole life. I think I've seen one playoff win. I think that's all I've seen in my lifetime. I'm 56. It's time they break their curse. My first World Series that I did was the Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs. And the Cubs broke, 108 years of not winning the World Series. So I don't have 108 years. I got another 30 to 40 years, and they got to get it done before that's over.
Listen to me, John. Rusty Hilger, Gary Danielson, Daryl Rogers. We've been through it all, Smoltz. We've been through it all. We deserve it.
Amen.
This may not matter, but you just made my year. Thank you so, so much for your kindness in doing this. John Smoltz, thank you so much. We'll be watching Fox.
You got it. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Well, I am just gobsmacked. Well, thank you. Genuine thank you to both of you for being a part of that. And genuine thank you to John Smoltz for just, you know, recognizing this is life and doing good things and kind of enjoying the process of life can lead to good things. He was into it, Amal. That matters. He was into the conversation.
Well, there's no question about it, but you know, he's always come across as a guy that's genuine and down to earth, and you could see that. And it's just fun to, when you have an opportunity to talk to somebody of that level. You know, we talked to a lot of great athletes, but this guy is on a different level.
Hey, big guy, you're welcome for the booking in February. If we're still employed, shout to Len Mead. If we're still employed, John Smoltz is going to join.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Wonderful job. Thank you again to John Smoltz, Hall of Famer, for joining us. We're going to transition. We're going to go Ross Jackson, Hall of Famer in his own regard, Locked On Saints podcast host, Sports Illustrated Saints News Network senior writer. You can find Ross on Twitter at Ross Jackson NOLA. And as we say hi to you, Ross, let's start with the big news for the Saints today. Then we'll delve deeper. But Kareem Hunt and Anthony Barr officially signing with the Saints. Let's get your take on those two.
So this is actually some late breaking news for you. Actually, neither player is signing with the New Orleans Saints today. So this is one of those big things that happens, right? You know our industry. Yep. They were expected to sign pending physicals, but as it seems, Anthony Barr, who has done this before in his career, I don't know if you remember, there was a report years ago. It was kind of that legal tampering period where it was like, oh, he's expected to sign a big money deal with this place. He was like a first day free agent guy. They pivoted from that and then went back to Minnesota and expressed his love for Minnesota.
Yes.
Well, he's done it again. and so he's not signing here in New Orleans. And actually, Kareem Hunt is going to be headed to a visit with the Indianapolis Colts. Per Diana Rossini of ESPN, he was called by the Indianapolis Colts before he stepped foot on the New Orleans Saints field for a visit and was offered more money there. And so he was encouraged to go and take that visit. He will take that visit. Now, both the doors are still open for both of those players. But right now, neither guy is actually signing with the team. And it's unfortunate because the Saints need help at both positions.
Well, let me follow up on all. And Ross, first off, thank you for the edification. Thank you for clarifying. And
not a correction for you guys. This literally just happened.
No, we very much appreciate it. So let's follow up with what the Saints want to do and what do they need to do at the two positions, running back and linebacker, now moving forward.
Yeah, I think what would be a great move for the Saints would be signing some guys like Anthony Barr and Kareem Hunt. No, I'm just kidding. But really, that would have taken care of it. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been the thing. I mean, these are guys that they're going to be without Alvin Kamara for three games to open the season. Eno Benjamin is down with a season-ending ruptured Achilles injury. And so they needed somebody that was going to be able to come in and help them maybe maintain that Alvin Kamara playbook. Now, the fact of the matter is that, like, they'll be fine the first three games of the season, assuming that they can keep both Jamal Williams and rookie Kendre Miller healthy. But the issue for the Saints is that they haven't shown an ability to be able to keep their players healthy for, like, three seasons now. Like, this has been an issue for them, and it's been ongoing with the soft tissue injuries and things like that here over the course of training camp thus far, just 11 days in, and they've already got three season-ending injuries to depth players that were going to serve big roles for them here in 2023. And so I think the next thing they need to do is not wait around for these guys to make a decision, but go and identify more talent that they might be able to bring in to help them out. I think that's a little bit easier at the linebacker position because, let's face it, Anthony Barr is 31 years old. And, you know, I think he was going to be set up for a potential impact for them. But I think Kareem Hunt was probably a little bit more in their wheelhouse of guys that could have a big impact while Alvin Kamara was out. There are other free agents that are out there, guys that they'll be able to go out there and court, but I don't think that they should sit around and wait for Anthony Barr and Kareem Hunt to have another change of heart.
Ross, Derek Carr comes in. Give me a little bit about your thoughts on him. And then Michael Thomas, about 4 years ago, was among the top two, three receivers in the league. Injuries have really kind of set him back. How is Michael Thomas? What kind of impact could he have with Derek Carr?
Yeah, for sure. To start with Derek Carr, I think what Derek Carr does is that he changes this offense in terms of what it's been over the past couple of years back to something more similar to what it was in the 15, 16 years before that, from 2016 on. That doesn't mean that he's Drew Brees. It doesn't mean that he's operating at Drew Brees' level, but he is closer to Drew Brees than Jameis Winston ever was. He is closer to a Drew Brees-style quarterback than Andy Dalton was ever going to be. So I do think that he's the type of guy that, you know, even in a, you know, poor offensive, you know, execution system that they had in Las Vegas, they averaged four more points per game than the New Orleans Saints did last year. And so I think that that's what he gives you. He gives you an extra handful of points, which would have won the Saints probably about six more games last year. And that's what you're looking for him to be able to do here in 2023, is just operate an offense a little bit more cleanly, a little bit more consistently, being able to get in and out of the operation in a way that is going to end up pushing this offense to be a little bit more, have a little bit more scoring potential. The way that Michael Thomas helps you is that he had an 80% contested catch rate, last year, according to Pro Football Focus, which is something that the Saints absolutely struggled with last year. There were no 50-50 balls in the New Orleans Saints offense. They were all 30-70 in favor of the defense. And so this helps you to have a guy like Michael Thomas back out there. And the growth of Chris Olave, which has become very evident here in training camp. We get to see this guy every day just ball out. And he has really kind of turned the corner as a contested catch receiver, which is something he did really well in college against smaller defenders. Now he's showing you he can do it against NFL defenders. So I think he helps in that aspect too. But the Saints were not great in the red zone. They were not great in contested catch opportunities last year. Michael Thomas, if he stays healthy, helps you out with both of those things without having to be 2019 149 catch guy.
Ross Jackson killing it. Locked On Saints podcast, Sports Illustrated. And you know, Ross, and much of it is because of the division, but the expectations for the Saints are sky high this year. 7-10 last year. I'll give you the numbers. They're plus 120, your favorites in the NFC South. And their season win total set at 9.5. I'm going to ask you this way, Ross. Is it warranted?
Yeah, I think so. And the thing for me is the division, but not just because the division, you know, frankly, stinks, but it's more so also because of the quarterback situation. Like, the New Orleans Saints are the only team that's going in with a veteran, proven quarterback that you can know what he's going to be, right? It doesn't mean that he's a world beater. It doesn't mean that he's the next Tom Brady in the division or anything like that. It doesn't carry that kind of weight. But you put together all of the quarterbacks in the NFC South that aren't named Derek Carr, that are expected to be starters this year, knowing that Bryce Young is expected to start over Andy Dalton, knowing that that Desmond Ridder is expected to start for the Atlanta Falcons, and then whatever is going to happen in Tampa doesn't really matter at that quarterback position. But Derek Carr has more experience than all of them combined. And so I think that makes a big difference for you. I just kind of look at, like, you're waiting for these quarterbacks within the division to turn the corner. You have nothing but questionable coaches in the division outside of maybe Arthur Smith, outside of maybe Frank Reich, who is very proven, but he's got a rookie quarterback that you have to wait and see is going to turn the corner and all those things. So I do think that it's warranted before the season begins. I think that the telltale sign by the time that the season kind of gets its midway point is how quickly does Bryce Young adjust to the NFL game, and does Desmond Ridder turn the corner the way that the Atlanta Falcons want to? If those two quarterbacks do, then they're worth the chatter within the division big time. But as of right now, just projecting forward, it makes perfect sense that Vegas would trust New Orleans over any other team in the division.
Ross, is Dennis Allen the right person to lead this team? They've got a good defense, got some talent on offense, but Dennis Allen's career record is 15-38.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dennis Allen has been one of those guys throughout his career that hasn't been able to really put together that winning record. He was very close last year. They finished out very strong, almost 4-0 toward the end of the season. Ended up going 3-4. But the issue has been, for him, is that he hasn't had the offense here in New Orleans that you would want, especially. But the defense has absolutely been on top. Like, the defense didn't allow more than 20 points the last 8 games of the season last year, and the Saints did not win all of those games. And that's kind of preposterous, especially when you think about what the New Orleans Saints offense has historically been throughout its time, right? Like the typical expectation of the New Orleans Saints offense. So the defensive side of the ball is there. That's why I think that Dennis Allen is the right guy to lead for now, because of what he can do over on that side of the ball. Now he's got a quarterback that he trusts in the building that should be able to help out over the offensive side, a guy that maybe on those 4th-and-1s from the 30-yard line, instead of sending the field goal kicker out, they'll send the quarterback back out there and send the offense back out there. Those things make a difference. So I do think that he's the right guy for now. He's the only option they got, so he's got to be the right guy for now anyway. And I do think that he's in a better situation here in New Orleans than what he was in his previous coaching, including last season. I think that this offense, watching it in training camp every day, is much better right now than it was at this time last year. And you hope that that trajectory continues to carry forth once they actually get out on the field. And hey, look, 14 games indoors doesn't hurt either.
Absolutely. Killed it, Ross. Thank you so much. Locked On Saints podcast host, of course, Sports Illustrated. You can find everything you need to know about Ross at Ross Jackson NOLA. We look forward to talking to you during the regular season. Thanks so much for the Hunt and Bar news as well. Thank you, Ross.
Oh, absolutely, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on. Y'all take care, stay safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Perfect. And for beat writers and podcast hosts, go ahead and just listen to that, the energy, the presence. Big guy, you're on fire with the bookings. Did you agree, Amal? That guy was spectacular.
I love what you said at the end. If you're a podcast host or if you're anybody else, you're a beat writer, just listen to this 10-12 minute excerpt and you'll know how to interview.
Much like John Smoltz kind of backed into that too. Another writer that I would normally have on couldn't join, but he said, here's this guy's number. I think you'll like him.
By the way, he just got Wally pipped, whoever the other guy was.
Yeah, that dude's our Saints guy.
Yeah, exactly.
This NFL season. The big guy. Well, you know, let's do 3-point stance. We'll get back to college next hour. And a coaching move has caused a big line move for a preseason game this week. You're going to want to know. Shout out to the big guy with the tees.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions, pro. Yeah, as in becoming a VSIN Pro subscriber and get all access and a pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2023 college football and NFL betting guides. Both the college football guide and our NFL betting guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. The only way to get the guides and everything we offer is to become a VSIN Pro subscriber, and you can do that exactly at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. We're going to get into 3-point stance. We'll talk about that coach making a decision for the pregame, or excuse me, for the preseason game coming up in just a bit. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. A couple of great guests as we transition a little bit here. First off, are all the donks, all those losers on Twitter, aka X, posting that they're getting paid, is that legit or is that some sort of weird conspiracy? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No.
Anybody that's listening to the show right now knows that over the last 2 days, people have been flexing that Elon paid them for posting on Twitter. Is it legit?
The two people I saw that got paid are two people I wouldn't expect to get paid. So I like both of them personally. They're people I sort of know, but not really. Like, they're like Twitter friends. They both posted that, like, they got a notification that they were getting money. It wasn't a lot of money, but I guess if you have subscribers, not followers on Twitter, you can get money for it. I'm sure it's going to fall apart. It's probably a Ponzi scheme, and it'll be the last legs of what we formerly knew as Twitter.
Well, it's probably not a Ponzi scheme because they're not asking for money from you, meaning the person tweeting. They're just giving them money, but
it's coming from somewhere.
Yeah, it's coming from a company that spent, he purchased for what, $44 billion?
Yeah, and the advertising on it are now like things that like shouldn't be advertising. Like, it's weird, just random people advertising their tweets.
You knew you were about to get parsed there, because first off, you could tell the energy has dipped. Let's get him some Doritos. I mean, it's unbelievable. No. He came in there like this. Well, it wouldn't be a Ponzi scheme. I knew you were about to be parsed. And then when I looked over when you were getting parsed, I saw the look on your face like you just smelled a bad banana. So maybe you two are headed towards a divorce, which would be great for the show, because the kumbaya since July is absolutely driving me crazy. Go ahead, Amal.
No, the problem is we had a Hall of Famer, and then we had a Hall of Fame guest in the follow-up as well with, was it Ross Jackson, right?
So you're saying just talking to me and Patrick's a bit of a letdown.
No, not at all. It was fun. Patrick, you know, kind of going back to his Michigan days, uh-oh, being a huge Tigers fan. It was a ton of fun.
Yeah, we were there.
Ross brought a ton of action in terms of the non-signing by the Saints on Anthony Barr and, of course, Kareem Hunt, which is interesting that Kareem Hunt, I think, he touches down in New Orleans. Then he's like, wait a minute, the Colts are offering me more money. I want to go 5-12, so I'm going to Indianapolis.
Thanks for the Cliff Notes version of the last 45 minutes.
Well, gee, it was better than you giving false information on what a Ponzi scheme is.
Yo,
at least it's accurate information.
And just started verbatim saying what happened on the show.
like we weren't a part of it.
Well, listen, it's better than misrepresenting what a Ponzi scheme is.
You were like a step away from the Chris Farley, Paul McCartney interview. Like, remember that time you were in the Beatles?
Hey,
that
was, I'm going to defend them all here, and my hand is to God. Been doing this a long time. I've been caught before, and I just started repeating what's happened in the past.
Hey, listen, I own a van down by the river.
Now, are you two interested? So Netflix is doing this, I guess it's called the Untold series. Have you guys heard?
Into it, Amal. Don't shake your head.
I don't know what it is. No, I'll tell you what Amal will be into. They're going to do one on the Florida Gators with Urban Meyer. Remember, they won the that one with people murdering, you know. The new one that's coming out is Johnny Manziel.
Came out at midnight.
Yeah, and I'm guessing you've already consumed it.
I did not. I wanted to, like, set aside. See, today's a really good TV night. You've got that came out on Netflix, and the Jets debut on Hard Knocks.
I want to ask them all. We know you're not into Hard Knocks. You and me are simpatico.
Yeah.
You couldn't pay me to watch it. The Manziel doc, now they did a good job promoting it, because they essentially, the promotion was Johnny Manziel admitted to almost wanting to kill himself, which is terribly unfortunate and sad. But he admitted that he was going to go on a bender and just eventually end it. We know about the trials and tribulations. He grew up bougie, golfer in Texas, like his dad, drinking problems. We know the story, but what he did at A&M, like, is there any part of you that's interested in checking out the Johnny Manziel doc?
Not really. I remember following his career closely when he was at A&M. You know, hopefully things are much better for him in his life at this point in time, but he was not a guy that I had the same interest in when you see it from other people's perspective. You know, he made that. Do you guys remember the play against Alabama where he threw it up against like six guys and everyone's like, great play? I'm like, you mean the worst throw of all time? They were fortunate that Mike Evans is a Hall of Fame receiver and he made the catch. I mean, look, he had some wiggle, and he was probably the first guy that we saw that had that type of mobility to a certain extent that really could take off and run and create some problems for the defense. But I feel like every quarterback at the collegiate level now is that.
So you're not interested in the doc?
I am not. No. I'm looking forward to the Gator doc.
I'm with you. Well, I'm with you. Which one?
The Florida Gators.
So, but here's the thing about Manziel. Like, the meteoric rise came out of nowhere. If you remember going into that camp, he was, like, just a guy in the mix. I think he was originally recruited to play safety at Oregon. Like, A&M was the only school to give him a chance to play quarterback. And out of nowhere, he just becomes this lightning rod. He's... when social media is taking off, this superstar on all these platforms that people are following him and taking pictures of him and videos while he's at a random pool party. Like, he was a rock star at Texas
but
A&M.
Boring.
And it came
you get
crumbling
caught up.
Down.
Yeah, but boring. And I'll tell you why I know Dustin. First off, he always had a boring personality. And here's all you need to know about Dustin. His favorite athlete to follow was Dennis Rodman.
I love Dennis Rodman.
To me, Dennis Rodman, and I remember Dennis Rodman when he was sitting outside the Palace of Auburn Hills with a shotgun and got approached by cops. This is before he had tattoos and colored hair. This is when he was a Piston. He got approached by cops. He was going to end it there. Dennis Rodman started off as an interesting character. Then Dennis Rodman realized that his brand was his character, and it got boring because he's not that interesting. Johnny Manziel was always the same to me. The hoopla around him was more interesting than the substance of the character. There was nothing going on. I grew up with a million Johnny Manziels, kids that were good athletes that derailed themselves because of drugs. I've seen that story. He doesn't have a personality.
Well, I just think it's a story that I just want to watch the rise, the fall, and what happened, just because, like, it's what he did to Nick Saban. He ran all over Alabama when Alabama was potentially at its peak. Like, that Alabama team that he beat, that was like as good as those rosters got, and he just torched them. And I just want to see all the details, maybe some of the stuff that we didn't hear or see about. I'm Fair. Fascinated by the story of it. And I actually think Johnny Manziel on the field has now become underrated because of all of the things that have gone on off the field.
I don't think he's become underrated. I just think that the players that have come up behind him, like the Caleb Williams, the Kyler Murrays, these guys are all doing the same things that Johnny Manziel was doing, but at an even better level.
But he did it first.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that.
Here's what makes a good documentary. Just the inner workings of a human. Does the personality interest you? We're going to get into the highlight plays. Let's be fair. Johnny Manziel, donk, as a human. Do you think it'd be fun to hang out with him?
When he was in his prime, yes, I would have loved hanging out with him.
Yeah, that's the point, because you want the chicks, you want the champagne, you want the leftovers going on around him.
I want the leftovers.
Like, the least interesting person on the Jordan doc was Rodman. Because when Rodman had to sit down and actually articulate and be interesting because of his substance, he had nothing. He had the gif with him going, here, he, voop, voop. But the reason that gif was so interesting is because Dennis Rodman literally had nothing to say.
Yeah.
Everybody else, Isaiah Thomas was eloquent, and he gave you something, and he hated Jordan. I've never met Johnny Manziel. Let me just backtrack a little bit. He might be a wonderful person. For some reason, he doesn't interest me. That's all.
Okay. Well, I'm tuning
Thanks,
in.
Guys. Appreciate it.
No, I don't disagree with you. There's nothing to add to it. I completely agree with you.
Dustin, quickly, before we go, let's pay off the tease. A line is adjusted in the pregame. Why do I keep on saying that? The preseason. And it's because of Vrabel, correct?
Yeah, so Mike Vrabel announced that he's going to have longtime assistant Terrell Williams, their assistant head coach, defensive line coach, serve as the head coach for Saturday's game against the Bears. So he's going to give this guy a chance, his assistant. I don't know if this is because of that, but the line opened Tennessee -1. It's now Bears -3.5.
Yeah, that's a significant shift, no doubt. And it's a good job by Vrabel looking out after his assistants. I mean, part of it feels like window dressing.
I think he gets life. Like, I don't know. I kind of like Mike Vrabel. Maybe I fall into like his bro stuff he does sometimes, but I just think he's a coach who gets life and understands what he's doing here.
Don't disagree.
Yeah. He's done a hell of a job as a head coach. He's been tremendous. Remember the 1 year in Houston as the DC was meh, but he seems to be, as you mentioned, he seems to be a bit of a CEO, does a great job. We're headed back to college football with Brandon Marcello next.